From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live Session presented by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. JPR Live Sessions are recorded with Audix microphones. Audix, when sound matters. My guest today is Ben Dickey. His new record is called A Glimmer on the Outskirts. He's live here in our studios today. Ben Dickey, hello. Welcome to JPR.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. Happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to meet you. Congratulations on a beautiful record.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of it.
My first time meeting you, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your background. I will say, a lot of musicians come through the studio. Few of them have such comprehensive packets of information. You've even got trivia questions about yourself that
That's
you
right.
provide, which is kind of amazing. You're originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, yeah?
That's exactly right. I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1977. Lived there until summer of 97 when I was 20 years old. I was playing rock and roll, punk rock slash rock and roll. And I moved to Philadelphia with my band. And then from there, music's sort of taken me everywhere I've gone. I've lived in Arizona, I've lived in Georgia, I've lived in New York, Philadelphia, Canada. Traveling around trying to be a musician. Well, being a musician, but trying to figure out how to make it work, you know.
And you're in Louisiana now.
I live in Northwest Louisiana now, in a cotton field.
I know that you landed a pretty interesting movie role. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But honestly, in reading through your background and the story of yourself and your family, seems like a movie could be made about you and your story. I mean, your dad was a college football player.
Yes.
Actually led the Southwest Conference in touchdowns in 67.
He was a bad boy.
Your mom worked for Bill Clinton.
Yes, she did.
Both in Arkansas and in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
That's a phenomenal, interesting background. Was sports of interest to you as a kid? I mean, if your dad was playing or had been a player, I guess, by the time you were,
Well, Arkansas is a wonderful place to grow up. It's a small, big state, mostly small. But, sports was certainly a thing. I played basketball.
I those who haven't seen you in person, you are a large guy.
Yeah, I still have a very serious passion for the game of basketball. I think it's a very beautiful game. I think it's a musical game. And I think it's a very inclusive game. If you look at where the NBA and the international game are, I'm obsessed with basketball sort of being this piece, this area of peace and harmony, you know, between all good people. But, growing up in Arkansas and knowing somebody that would be president and having a dad that was a football star, you know, as exciting as that is and was, it was just the way it was. I mean, that was the way what my life was. And Arkansas continues to be a bastion for really kind, compassionate, creative individuals who are trying to change the world in some way or the other. And I'm proud to be from Arkansas and proud to know people that are out to be, for harmony and peace.
Yeah. How did the music bug hit you?
It hit me hard when I was a kid. I loved music from the time, you know, my first memories were sort of like holding melodies, you know, riding in cars and being able to recognize a song I liked on the radio and expressing that, albeit without any language yet. My grandfather gave me a guitar. He had a guitar when he was alive that he gifted to me before he died. And I took to it mysteriously fast. I think I wanted to impress him. I think I wanted to impress, you know. I was the youngest of three. I loved music, and I wanted to show people that, you know, music is a magical endeavor.
Yeah.
And it's all around us, you know.
Now, was your grandfather a player or just a hobbyist? Or?
He sang opera, actually.
No kidding.
He sang when he was 21 years old, he was on his way to New York to sing at Carnegie Hall, and he was in a car accident. A Pubwood truck stopped short at an intersection, and his car went underneath it and severed his vocal cords.
Oh, wow.
So he had that on him. My grandfather was like unbelievable vocalist. He had a guitar as kind of, he'd always say it's a nice to have something, somebody accompany you. He'd always say that, you know, it's nice to have an accompaniment. So he played guitar sort of as just a little hobby. He was a sports and outdoor council like leader when he was a young man, and went on to do that later in his life where he supported kind of like a big brother program through a Methodist church.
Wow.
But music was always kind of this like presence around all that energy, you know.
It's like another chapter in the life and story of Ben Dickey and his
family,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
The movie coming to theaters near you.
Yeah.
Ben Dickey is my guest live today on JPR Live Sessions. His new record is called A Glimmer on the Outskirts, out on Sex Hawk Black Records. BenDickeyMusic.com, the place to go online to find out more and hear more. What do you want to play first for us today?
I'll play the first song on this record that I made called A Glimmer on the Outskirts. The first song is called Busy Waltz, and it's a love song. Diamondback cullies and pearls I am fishing beyond the great halo where no one belongs. Pry open oysters, suck 'em down glistening. Drink up the liquor like a good salty dog. Give back the pencil that you drove through my heart. Reviving the water is above from your christening. Lace blade like a baby, snap back like a gun. Young women like to wallow, erasing my fate. Sway bare in the water, in the swells they gyrate. Snake, that chicken steak feasting, the one that stole your sweet egg laying hen. Rewind the movie show, return to your mister. The mystery reframes before the end can begin. The showers that leak out when you're sidewalking on the back of a memory you won't feel till it's gone. One is the want, and the fun is the other. Slick in the sliding grass, waving my wand. Her eyes, her thighs, her breathing and her tongue. Her breasts and her heartbeat, her fall asleep song. Somewhere in the shadows, beyond the big breaks, deep down in the abyss where my desire
quakes. That is called The Busy Waltz. It's Ben Dickey playing live for us today here on JPR Live Sessions. His new record is called A Glimmer on the Outskirts. That is out on Sex Hawk Black Records. Man, that is fantastic.
Thank you so very much.
What a great song.
Appreciate that.
I was really interested to find out that compared to the style of music that we just heard you play and the years that you spent playing punk music, that you were such a fan of old blues.
Oh, yeah. Well, that music holds magic in it. You know, even when you're at a very young age, if you hear those first recordings of Muddy Waters or Sun House, that there's something so mysterious about it. You can smell petroleum in the air. You can smell booze. You can smell sweat and salt and sorrow. And then you get up into the big jump juke style of blues music, and you hear joy, and you hear musicianship and performance. And I don't know. You know, I was a big fan of Jimi Hendrix very early on when I was about 10 years old. And some years after I really got keen to him, he put that blues album out. And the blues, the cover of that album was a mosaic of blues players. And I knew six of the 40. Hmm. But when I had that Hendrix blues record, I looked at the table of contents, had every photograph and all every name. And I went out to all the like CD, you know, 2-bit used CD stores and got everybody on the list. Because I figured if Jimmy was filled with that stuff, I needed to be keen to it. And it introduced me to T-Bone Walker and Sonny Williamson and all these people who have these unbelievable textures and flavors and ways and grooves and swagger and skill. And it was, you know, the whole universe and all those tones and all those sounds and all that, those words. I mean, Howlin' Wolf and Muddy's whole thing was unbelievable to me and wildly interesting and very, it turned me on a lot, you know.
Do you play much of that stuff?
I mean, I can. I tend to like go to it and have it, you know, show its mysteriousness to me and remind me of how much of that still is around. And I certainly go for it hunting for textures and sounds. And, you know, I had this recording of Son House. That was his last recording in London and from like 70. And it's like a 96-minute performance and it's seven songs. Hmm. And as bad a shape as Son was in at the end of his life, he still had this crackling energy that he was able to conjure, you know? And anytime I see a performer, even if they do have some sort of substance problem, there's that heightened state, that weird hypnotized state, and I always seem to find it in the blues players. And inside of this 96 minutes and seven songs, Son tells stories, and he plays guitar, and he sings, but there's no difference in any of it from, you know, one to the other, meaning the songs and then the banter and what he intends you to like see about himself is so beautiful, you know. So It's very informative and inspiring.
You think that at some point in your future there might be a Ben Dickey blues record?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Charlie and I daydream about all, you know, because if you're going to do something like that, you really sort of have to not... You know, how can I put this? You don't want to aim too much. You just want to get together and play and try to sure. discover, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, see what comes out. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, we're going to do this, you know, whatever. Like, I think you lose it when you do that. But if you get a bunch of people together that love it and know about it and sort of saturate in it, you can make something cool happen. And it's, I would love to do that. You know, that whole Louisiana and Mississippi lope kind of... the talking blues stuff, you know, like that stuff, you could do that all day. I mean, every track would be like 12 minutes long.
You know, speaking, I hate to go back to this again, but speaking of this idea of all of the different chapters of your life and background, I read that your first solo record, Sexy Birds and Saltwater Classics, was written over the course of like 9 months on Mondays because that happened to be your day off as a chef.
Yeah. So it was.
Tell me about that background.
So the songs themselves were, I mean, I write songs every day. I mean, I put them, some of them come out and I make them, but I was working as a chef. I had a rock and roll band called Blood Feathers for about 10 years living in Philadelphia with my writing partner at the time, a fellow called Drew Mills, who still makes music in Philadelphia, excellent music. But that band was falling apart at the seams and I was bummed about it. And I was also... you know, the service industry and the food industry was always appealing to me because I wanted to be creating something, and I think feeding people is a really cool way to exercise creativity. And there's also the tremendous amount of discipline involved in it. So I was drawn to that world, but it sort of took over a little bit, and my band broke up, and I was working as an executive chef, hustling too hard to try to also be an artist that wasn't, you know, an artistic culinary artist. And so every other Monday, I would go see my friend Quentin. And he has a little home studio as well as a real studio, but I would just go to his little home studio and put in 5 hours every other Monday from like December of 13 until June of 14, something like that. And I came out with a record. It was really a Hail Mary. I was really trying to figure out what to do. I moved to Louisiana shortly after I finished it, and... I didn't really know what I had until we started mixing it and mastering it. And I needed to make something. I needed to remind myself of what I wanted to be doing. And when I moved back to Louisiana, I had this album, and it gave me something to like work at, you know. Yeah. That was what the intention was.
Well, maybe when we wrap up here, I'll twist your arm, and maybe we can get a recipe out of you that we'll post on our site along with the session.
I'm all about easy principles in the culinary world, because that's what it's all about.
Right on. Well, today's all about music. Ben Dickey is my guest live today here at Jefferson Public Radio. His new record is called A Glimmer on the Outskirts. It's out on Sex Hawk Black Records. What do you want to play next for us?
I'll play this song called Sing That One to Me, which is, if you've ever had, you know, a friend that was down and out, and you saw that they were down and out for such a long time, and then you surprised them on a Friday when you knew they didn't have to work for the next 2 days, and go, hey, we're going to drive to the beach for the weekend, or we're going to drive to the casino, or whatever it is. It's a song that's about those people that help out their friends, even though they're kind of woeful themselves.
Find us a hotel, checking when the sun goes down. Ride a couple miles to the water and hold under the table, gonna drink the town. We're gonna find us a barkeep, a pretty little one that knows to keep pumping them out until the sadness hardly shows. We sing hats off to Roy Harper for some pretty young thing. We sing manic depression with our heartstrings to those pretty things. Then we're gonna jump on the 20, motivate to Dallas town. Go and have a nap on the grassy knoll where they cut John Kennedy down. And we're gonna uncork a bottle, maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Find a fuzzy place where the lights is low to relax and unwind. Find some place to listen to some pedal steel guitars. Find some gals to whisper our aims to shoot the stars. Possible this only is a ride. Are we being hunted with no better place to hide? Maybe you're adorable, please handle me with care. Could you sing that number to me, that one to me? And we're gonna wander the expanse, flash across the mighty sand, become good raiders in the steely night, and pull the light up with our hands. And we're gonna find us a fixer, helper in the sky. Howl at the women on the river boats, laugh so hard we cry. Baby, is it possible this only is a ride? Are we being hunted with no better place to hide? Baby, you're adorable, please handle me with care. Could you sing that number to me, that one to me?
That is Ben Dickey playing live for us today on JPR Live Sessions. The new record is called A Glimmer on the Outskirts, out on Sex Hawk Black Records. BenDickeyMusic.com is the place to go online. Well, to make our gearheads in the audience happy, tell me a little bit about your setup here that we're listening to.
Well, we're listening to a Magnatone Panoramic True Stereo 2 10-inch speaker amplifier that has true pitch-shifting vibrato that sends the signal left and right and left and right. So it provides a very wonderful modulated dance of tone that goes left and right, and it makes it very wide. And when I'm playing all these gigs with Hayes Carl on the road, I actually also introduce a Princeton Reverb into the mix. Pan the Magnatone, True Stereo, broad, wide, 10 and 2 kind of across the auditorium, and stick that Princeton right in the middle, and man, it sounds good.
Was that a sound that you heard out in the world somewhere, or one that you have come across as a knob twister?
I love amplifiers. I love ampage. I love guitars. And I've always loved modulation. You know, the whole world is modulated. I was standing in a marble room in a museum in Des Moines, Iowa, just humming and listening to the wonderful sounds, the bouncing echoes. So when I was a kid, I liked to play big Marshall amplifiers, just, you know, straight in. But the more I get into it, the more I love it. The more I like things to be moving. I don't know, hard pan or whatever, but magnetones are back on the scene, and they provide this very, I guess it's just creamy. It's a sound that I really, really love. And I like using magnetones for like that really like creamy, silky, wide, clean sound. And I like using Fender amplifiers for more of like a driven, overdriven sound. But I am a total guitar nerd, and I love gear, and there's so many amplifiers and combinations of amplifiers that I want to spend time with, you know. So part of this whole dream of being a musician is just to get more gear.
Well, there's always time. I definitely want to talk about this movie that maybe some of our listeners have heard of or have seen, but I actually want to start by asking you to tell me a little bit about the book that was at the genesis of this movie.
Well, so the genesis...
and we're talking about...
Yeah, this Blaze. The book came after this sort of thunderclap notion that we should make this. Ethan had this New Year's Eve vision that we should make this movie.
Ethan being Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke, right, a good friend of mine. And, you know, like I said, I was working in kitchens. My band was breaking up. I thought he was just saying, dude, you could do something like this. And he was trying to give me a cheer-up speech. And that was in January of 16, like right when the year turned fresh, young 16.
And had you done any acting, like drama club in high school or anything like that?
I mean, I did the drama club just because the spring play got you out of class for like the last 6 weeks of school. That was the only appealing bit. And then a lot of my friends were into it, but I just, you know, I wanted to play my guitar.
Okay.
So Ethan went to South by Southwest in March of 16, and he met with Lewis Black because he knew Lewis Black. Knew those folks, Towns, and that whole Blaze and that whole outlaw country scene. And Ethan asked him, you know, do you think there's a story there? Do you think there's a movie there? And he said, of course there is. Have you read Sybil Rosen's book? And we hadn't. And so Ethan immediately bought one and had two sent to our place so Beth and I could read it. And it became so crystal clear that there was so much more to it than just the songs, but the songs were wonderful indicators of what this kind of rich life had been.
Yeah. Now, for 50 cents worth of context here, the movie Blaze tells the story of Blaze Foley, who was a Texas country singer-songwriter in the 70s?
The love story of this, of our story, is a late 70s. And then he sabotaged himself so many times, but his rise to his plateau was about between 80 and 83.
Okay.
He was legendary to musicians in Texas from 77 to when he died in 89. And so Sybil Rosen was his lover, and they lived in a treehouse in the 70s and had this love affair. So her book about that time and then rediscovering him through his death, it was kind of that was the guts of what we were doing. But also the songs, and people who write songs or people who make art for any measure that are met with indifference, because 99.99999% of all artists, it's for themselves and maybe for their friends, ambition aside.
Yeah.
And Blaze was somebody who had a tremendous voice and a tremendous talent and a tremendous capacity for songwriting. But, you know, people say to me every time they see, you know, that I see him out in the world, we didn't know who he was, but now we do. Thank you. And that really feels good, you know.
And in the movie, you're not just Ben Dickey, musician in a band somewhere. You're Blaze.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're actually the lead role in the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
And apparently killed it. right? I was reading Sundance awarded you a special prize, like the, this isn't really a prize, but this dude killed it, so we need to give him something, right?
It was like a very special participation prize.
That's great.
Yeah. No, it was a high thrill. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that's really cool. Congratulations. Really,
thank you very much. Yeah, yeah.
You had to turn off or at least shut out the songwriting part of your brain or yourself while you were immersed in learning and studying and becoming,
right,
you know, Blaze Foley. When the movie wrapped, did the floodgates open back up, or did it take you some time to get back into being you?
Oh, they were all but bursting when we had like 10 days left. I mean, I was doing everything in my power. I wrote two songs. The Alia and I's last 2 days, I wrote like four songs, and I couldn't stop. I was like, it was like having someone demanding to be let in from the rain. You know, you're just like, all right, finally, I'll let you in. I really didn't want that to happen, but it was, it was also very wonderful that it happened like that. And I attribute that to Blaze. You know, I have a very unique relationship with Blaze Foley and Michael Fuller as he was born in this world, because I never met him in life, but I know a lot of people who loved him very much in life. And through them, I'm closer to him. But in my weird meditative state of learning all of his songs, I got to know him pretty good. It was as well as somebody who might have played music with him, you know?
Yeah.
And when I started writing these new songs that started to sort of like sneak their way, or actually burst their way through the door, I could sort of feel his energy smiling at me like, see, it was worth it. Because it was hard. I mean, the whole thing was hard and it was scary, and it led to a very particular kind of depression afterwards, because it's, you know, making a movie is very exciting and challenging. But when it's over, all these people that you've been working so hard with on this one particular mission are gone.
Yeah.
And that you're not prepared for that. And also you get mired in the hypnotic state of trying to be someone that you're not. And then when everything's over, there's nobody there to tell you to stop doing that.
Right. And someone who did not exactly have a happy ending.
No, but his death was not his ending, you know?
Yeah. How has that chapter of becoming Blaze and learning those songs affected your songwriting? How has it made you a better songwriter? I preface this by saying that I listened to an interview you gave where you talked about how his songs were three-chord songs,
mm-hmm.
but very challenging three-chord songs.
They're elusive, yeah. I mean, as a musician, as somebody who's been obsessed with the instrument of guitar and just anything, really, like, when I hear something I love, I want to know what's going on. How did you do that? Any kind of music. And so with Blaze's songs, I mean, at one point you could ask me to play 95% of his catalog and I could have done it. And the deeper you get into it and the more care you want to take, the more you realize that there's this wild balance of simplicity and evidence of sharpening a particular tool for so long that it's hard to replicate. I mean, I know a lot of wonderful guitar players who, when you get into making the steps that Blaze took as a finger-picking player, it's almost like a ragtime is happening. He's very good at guitar. He's very, very good. He's never flashing, you know. But it changed me in that I was obsessed with protecting that, if that makes sense, and getting it right. I didn't want to emulate his voice, but I wanted to get these songs right. And I started to look at and recognize, these like blinders came off, so to say, where I could really recognize the depth of complexity inside of that simplicity. And there are like African juke and jive kind of bands from the late 50s that have four pieces and they're doing very minimal things, but the minimal things that they do together make this wonderful, wonderful thing. And I somehow can see that a little bit better. You know, architectural speaking, like I could look at a song and hear a song and recognize what's happening, recognize the value of one particular thing versus the other and how it makes something new. And I think that Blaze gave me that just because I was so like face deep, ankle deep, you know, chest deep in these songs, you know, really, really illuminated that somehow for me. It's mysterious too, but it did. It happened.
Well, I'm grateful for the chance to meet you and listen to you today. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm happy to be here.
Ben Dickey is my guest today here on JPR Live Sessions. His new record is called A Glimmer on the Outskirts. You can find information online, bendickeymusic.com. What do you want to wrap up with?
I'll wrap out with this song called I Think It's All Different. I
one cut ahead and the other went around, chasing down the kid with the knockdown sound. Well, there's a look in your eyes that can make me go clear. One could be honey and the other could be tea. Won't you swirl me around? You call them a cream, all right. Woke up deep in the middle of the night. In my sleep I was writing on the walls and the wires and spite of myself. Heaven could be heaven, hell could be hell. All time torn asunder, reminiscing in an old hotel. Hey, all right, look to the south, rising like a river full of cotton mouth. Hard to deny, you've been hoping for the road to wash out. King Kong, he's coming full steam, gonna steal your valor, crush your color scheme. Heaven could be heaven, hell could be hell. Take yourself back to your wicked wishing well. Coming across the highway fair, there's a carnival coming. Could you meet me there? All right, I'm coming home tonight. 'Cause heaven could be heaven and hell could be hell. I think it's all different than anybody here can tell. Woke up sleeping in the middle of the day. Something good must be coming my way, but it's over. It's the end of the line. Hell could be heaven, heaven could be hell. I catch you leaning in the dream. I'm gonna push you in your wishing. Oh, well. Every time you think you're done, you catch yourself falling for someone. Tell you everything that you think you wanna hear, alright. King Kong, he's coming full steam, gonna steal your valor, crush your color scheme. Heaven could be heaven, hell could be hell. I think it's all different than anybody here can tell. Oh, heaven could be heaven and hell could be hell. 'Cause everything is different than anybody here can tell. Thank you.
getting weird in here.
That is Ben Dickey playing live for us today here on JPR Live Sessions. A Glimmer on the Outskirts is the name of that new album. Information is online at bendickeymusic.com. JPR Live Sessions are supported by and recorded with Audix Microphones. Located in Wilsonville, Oregon, Audix designs, engineers, and manufactures high-performing innovative products that contribute to the advancement of the professional audio industry. Ben, thanks so much for coming by. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. I appreciate it.
Support for JPR Live Sessions comes from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned, operated, and argued over since 1980. Proud supporter of independent thought, whether that's online, over the air, or in a bottle. More at sierranevada.com.